Welcome in, everybody. Chris Landry here for this week's edition of the Landry Football Podcast, brought to you by our good friends at the Tom and Hawk Football Show and BetQL Daily. Got some great information to share with you about those great shows and those great partners here to this show. We've got a lot to get to today. As we always do, we try to do a hodgepodge of things that like to focus on certain things. And I've got a few that I want to get to today. I'm going to talk about the college football calendar and how I think it's leading to a lot of these coaching moves, because I've been asked a bunch of that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the rankings in college and kind of how teams get better. And what do I really mean by that? Because I mention it a lot and some people have asked me, you know, it seems simple. How do you get better? But we're going to get into some of the reasons why. And then we're going to take a look at it. We'll answer your questions inside the chat room. So, folks, if you're listening to us on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitch TV, join us and join the show. Join us in the chat room. Tell us what's on your mind. Tell us what you're thinking about. Bring your questions here, because we've got a lot to get to today. A couple of news around the league. We are still waiting. The latest on Odell Beckham is that he is looking through a couple of offers. I don't think the offer that the Green Bay Packers made, and we've got this over at LandryFootball.com in our notebook, was a sincere offer or a big offer. So I don't know that that's going to be the case. We're going to get into where he might go. But a couple of reminders, if you are listening to this show in podcast form, we invite you to join us either on YouTube or Facebook. And how do you get there? Landry Football is the channel, YouTube channel. Landry Football is the Facebook page. And, of course, Chris Landry Football Twitch channel. So you can find us there. How do you do it? Just go to LandryFootball.com, and you can see the links to Facebook, YouTube, Twitch. You got it all there. Very simple. Join us right there. Join us in the chat room, as I mentioned, live. And if you would, click and listen to the show through LandryFootball.com and make sure that you sign up for Landry Football's conference call. That's how we have the algorithms to make this show work and grow it. So please help us do that. So we're going to get into some news and notes. I mentioned Odell Beckham. A lot's been asked about his situation. Where is he going to end up? Where would be the best fit, at least among the teams that appear to be interested? I don't think there's a lot of interest among Green Bay based upon the offer. I don't know that's a really good fit for him either. I don't know what the future is with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay beyond this year. I think he has to make this decision based upon short-term and long-term. I think the interest level is for teams that can contend, can compete, maybe make a run this year. Green Bay would fit that category, but I think he also wants to look at the future and see where that might go. I think the Saints, there's been a lot of talk about the Saints. I don't think that is as good a fit for him. You don't have a stable quarterback situation. You don't know who the quarterback is going to be next year. I don't think the Saints are real contenders this year. I think they're competitive, and he could certainly help them. There's a need for the Saints to add a guy like him, but I don't think it's an ideal fit for him. There is some interest in him in going to the Chiefs. I don't know what level of interest. Money may not drive the decision. Money may not be the deciding factor in the decision, but it's certainly going to be a part. My experience in the league is that money's always a factor. It always plays a factor. If the Chiefs make a good offer, it certainly would fit the criteria of a contender. Even though the Chiefs are not off to a good start, you can make the case that they are not the same type of team as they have been, but certainly with his addition could certainly enhance their cause. You know, they've got a quarterback set for the future, so that might make some sense. We'll see where it would go. I mentioned Seattle. I don't know the level of interest that they might have in him or he in them, but would make some sense. We'll see where it goes. We'll keep you up to date over at LandryFootball.com. We've got all the latest news and notes injury information, who's practiced, who appears to be in and out this week in the NFL, as well as college football, what's going on in practices there. Check it all out at LandryFootball.com inside our notebooks. Also, LandryFootball.com is where you want to go to get the detailed film room breakdowns of all the games that have played this past weekend and the preview of the games this upcoming weekend. So check that out. Take advantage of the football season sale. That's what we got for you at Landry Football. So I wanted to discuss something as we've had an issue now that's taken place with assistant coaches being fired during the season. It's not that it's new in college, I'm talking about. We've had, obviously, at Florida, Oregon State, Washington already this year, or this week. We've had certainly a change at TCU. We've had some changes on Nebraska staff. We've got quite a few of them that's taken place. Now, this is not new. We've seen situations in the past where coaches will get let go during the season. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I've never sit there and say it's a good thing when a coach gets fired. Sometimes it's necessary, though. Sometimes when you make a move, it's to try to get your team better. You feel like you can make some moves in-house. There are a couple of things that are affecting this. One, it's the increase in the quality and the number on the staff. So like when Auburn fires their receiver coach early in the year, it's because they weren't getting enough out of their receiving coach it from their receiving core from a coaching standpoint, from a development standpoint. They had a very qualified analyst there that could step into that role immediately. That's a different situation than in years past. So while you had moves in years past, you're having more of it now because, A, you can make a change during the season because you've got somebody that you can easily slide in that's a part of the program, that's been around it, that you can make a seamless transition, more so than you ever could before. It used to be when you did that, you didn't have anybody to turn to. You had to go to a GA. That's not an ideal situation. So you've got more of that. Also, you don't have as much time. Gone are the, you know, 4 or 5 year plan of building a program. You better win now. You don't have a year to sacrifice. If you can win a couple of extra games and, you know, somehow get something done this year when it's not going well, you got to run, make a run to do it as quick as you can. So that element's changed things. The other thing that's had an effect is the early signing day. And it's part of what I want to get into, and I'm going to jump into it in a bit, of the college football calendar, which is a pet peeve of mine in something that needs to change. It should change anyway. You know, people will say this, well, you make a change from a head coaching standpoint to get a head jump on hiring a coach because you'd like to try to get a coach in position before early signing day. Well, early signing day is in December, mid-December, and you usually can get a guy in, or sometimes you can get a guy in before early signing day. And while it is not imperative, in fact, you've got to be careful not to make the mistake of hiring a guy quick and hiring an insufficient candidate over a better candidate a little bit later. Better to hire the better candidate later than hire the lesser candidate sooner, if that makes any sense. But the reality is you want to hire the best candidate you can and then get them as soon as you can. That's important to help the recruiting class. If you lose a recruiting class, you got to think more than just one recruiting class in terms of your hire. But if you lose a recruiting class, it's not going to hurt you the first year or the second year. It's going to be the third year in when people are expecting in year 3 and 4 to have an impact and to really start to ascend. Not if you had a recruiting class that you basically lost the first year out. You have to factor that in to how you evaluate down the road. So I think there are a lot of things that are at play, circumstances that you can make changes quicker and make adjustments quicker on your staff is the reasons why you do it. Two, you don't have as much time to develop your program as you did in the past because you better win immediately or you're out, particularly at big time programs. But here's the other problem that I think people may not be aware of that I wanted to bring up. When you're on the recruiting trail, and let's just take the case of Florida, where Florida has had a very unfulfilling season. Probably, as we discussed it at the end of last year, Dan Mullen should have probably made a move on Todd Grantham to go in a different direction. He did not. He brought him back. So be it. As he brings him back, it has not worked. It's pretty clear that they're going to make a move. They may even make some other moves. Well, the problem is recruiting is accelerated to the point of December, which is, again, a month away from signing day or thereabouts, 5-6 weeks. You're sitting there and finishing up, trying to putting the final touches on this early recruiting class. The kids that are going to sign in December are pretty much committed or pretty much know what they're going to do, most of them anyway. They want to know, is the guy that's recruiting me going to be there? Is the position coach that's there is going to be there? And so it puts coaches in very difficult spots. So if you're recruiting a defensive player and a player wants to know if Todd Grantham's going to be there or not, whether the player likes Todd Grantham or not, he wants to know, and the head coach is in an awkward position. He doesn't have to be transparent to the media and fans. But if he tells a recruit or a high school coach or the family of a recruit, whatever, that one thing and do another, like yes, he's going to be there, and then 2 weeks later you fire him, then you're caught lying to him, and then sometimes it hurts. Well, why didn't you lie? Well, I couldn't tell you the truth. You have to sometimes make decisions based upon what is going to happen in a couple of weeks or 4 or 5 weeks in recruiting. So you've got to be careful to not ruin a relationship by not telling the truth or not being as transparent, but yet you can't be so transparent as to have a lame duck guy. It's very complicated is what I'm saying. So sometimes you make a move to let people know this is the moves we're making. And, you know, now what you've got to do is either figure out, can you keep the defensive commitments that you have, in this case at Florida, can you keep the ones that you want on board and convince them we're going to hire the best guy we can to be the coordinator and keep them hot for you to stay with you or at least hold off signing somewhere else until you put it together? So what this does, it accelerates the process and makes it a very uncomfortable process to try to maybe put the cart before the horse, which leads to an issue that I have brought up before that I would like to address again, and it's a pet peeve of mine. And I want to start off by saying that, yes, I've spent a long time working in the NFL and in college football. I am blessed that I work with a lot of college programs and with still in the NFL. So I see the good and bad of both. I am not one of those that wants my college football to look like the NFL or the NFL to look like college football. I like them like I love them both like you would love your children, but you love them differently, different personalities, but you don't want them to be the same person. You love them for who they are. That's my feeling. However, I think there are things that both could learn from one another. And one of the things that I think college football struggles with, and there are many, just like the NFL has theirs, the NFL is much more organized. their calendar is more organized. They're structured. There's the football season. Then there's the kind of the coaching search season, which is not a season, but there's a time frame where it takes place. Then it leads to the off-season free agency period, draft preparation, the draft, the OTAs, the mini camps, the training camp, the preseason, the regular season. It's really structured. There's a time for everything. There's a time to do your business of football and all elements in all 12 months of the calendar year. And there's a great sales and marketing part 12 months a year. College football is about as bleeped up as you can be. You've got a college season. You finish the season right after the conference championships. You're getting ready for bowl games. You got an early signing day. Then you got another one in February. By the way, you're changing coaches. You got kids leaving in the transfer portal, and they can leave anytime they want. You don't know whether players are coming, they're going, who's leaving for the draft, who's leaving for the portal, who you can you bring in from the portal, who can you sign early, who can you sign late. It is a cluster bleep. There's no organization. There's no rhyme or reason. It makes no sense. It's asinine. For a profession that relies on structure, organization, when we meet, when we practice, how we develop, we just go haywire in how we handle college football. Look, the pros and cons to an early signing day. I don't buy that an early signing day in December being a good thing. Oh, sure, it puts most of the recruiting out of the way and you can begin to work on next year's class. And between December and February, you don't have as much recruiting to do for that class because most of it's done. I get that part of it. That, to me, is not the right way to do it, though. If you want to have an early signing day, which I'm all for, have it in August. Have it in July, August 1st, July 15th, whatever. Before a kid's senior year, he wants to go to school, you can sign it. It would be good little publicity before the season starts, a little hype, and it would give a chance for a kid to say, I know where I want to go, I know who I want to play for, and here it is. And you wouldn't have as many, but you'd have some. Those that want to sign, sign. Now, if that school has a coaching change for whatever reason, the kid ought to have an out that he can make that null and void and sign in the regular signing day. I also think the regular signing day should be early March, maybe mid-March. Why? I think there needs to be a segmented, more organized schedule. Once we get to the college football season to the end, I think it's time where you're going to have coaching changes. They're inevitable. That happens in December. It's usually completed in January. You have some assistant coaching movements in January. It gives plenty of time for a staff to be assembled because it's a domino effect, right? Well, you might not have any changes, but then you might have a guy that leaves to go for a better job somewhere, and it leads to this, and it's just a cross-pollination of where guys settle. Give it time to do that, and it's fair to the kids, and it's fair to the schools to have enough of an opportunity to make a coaching change on your staff or the head coach, which leads to staff changes. You have an opportunity to do that. And do that very effectively and have enough time to do that, put it together, and recruit and get a class in by March 1st, let's say. Then you put that class to bed, and then you can begin March and April and May, because May is a big recruiting month for the next year. And then you can begin to work towards that to see if you can get kids that want to sign early in the mid-July, or let's just call it mid-July, early signing day. I think that would be a better way to do it. The calendar is messed up. The calendar causes a lot of problems. Transfer portal. You've heard my feelings on the transfer portal. Fundamentally, I got no problem with a kid that is legitimately unhappy and feels that there's a better opportunity to go somewhere else. It's America. It's a freedom of decision. I get it. As a coach, I can tell you, most kids are going to make a mistake. There are more kids in the portal than there are spots to put them. If you're going to allow kids to go, you know what's going to happen. It's already happened. Coaches will take kids and say, you know, these eight kids are not getting it done. They're not as good as we thought. You don't have to honor their scholarships now. You will bring them in and push them into the transfer portal. You'll get rid of them to go and get somebody else. You're not honoring the scholarship. In the past, it was understood, even though it's one-year renewable scholarships, it was understood that you honored it for 4 years. Now, because the kids can leave anytime they want, what they do is they will take advantage of that and push them out the door. So I don't think the transfer portal, a kid leaving anytime he wants, is a good thing for the kid. I think it's to the detriment. I think there should be better regulation. I think there should be some standard of scholarship contracts that will protect the player a little bit more, protect the school a little bit more, but allow for circumstances through a board that, if it's mutually agreed upon, that a kid can leave. And there's a point in time where they can leave. Not anytime they want, but there's only certain times of the year they can enter the portal. It should be more organized, and then that's the way there's a certain amount of time where a kid can go into the portal, a certain amount of time that it can be recruited and then come out of the portal. I think better organization would lead to better decisions from a player standpoint, from a school standpoint. I think those things are a really big problem that we have. The NFL calendar, as I mentioned, is so much better because what it does, it's segmented, it's organized. You've got a start of the league year in mid-February. There's a start, should be a start, of the college football league year at a certain point. It could be a couple of times a year. It could be tied into semesters, although some schools are on quarter systems. You need to tie it into the season. Okay? You can't transfer in the middle of the season. You know, at a certain point in time, you can transfer. If you decide you're going to leave, you flunk out of school, you get run off, you want to leave, you can leave, but you can't go anywhere you want until the next semester at a next time frame. So better organization, it is chaos right now, and it is not benefiting anybody. I tell you what is benefiting, folks. Football season is heating up, and we've got the perfect podcast to deliver the scoop on all things NFL, from Amazon Music, the Tom and Hawk Football Show, happens twice a week and is hosted by veterans Joe Thomas and Andrew Hawkins. It's your one-stop shop for NFL stories, serious laughs, and a touch of bromance between Joe and Hawk. I tell you, those guys are really great. Pro football is basically a soap opera. Between the two of them, Tom and Hawk have 10 Pro Bowl selections, all Joe's, and 2 college degrees, both Andrew's. But together, they're a dynamite team. And they'll give you an insider's look at what it's like to be in the NFL and what's going down in the league right now. As I mentioned, pro football is basically a soap opera with too many storylines to keep up with. Thankfully, Tom and Hawk will keep you up to speed each week on what's happening in America's favorite sport. So put on your team's favorite jersey and get ready for some smash mouth football, because it's Tom and Hawk time. The Tom and Hawk Football Show is the only football podcast hosted by two longtime NFL vets, former teammates, and current best friends. Each week, twice a week, join 10-time Pro Bowler Joe Thomas and 7-year NFL vet Andrew Hawkins as they bring you unfiltered and insider's perspective on today's NFL that you're not going to get anywhere else. I scouted both of those guys. They're the real deal. Listen every Wednesday as they welcome in guests, play some games, make some weekly picks as they weave through the NFL slate. And on Mondays, listen exclusively on Amazon Music for the Insider Minicast, where Tom and Hawk bring you football faster, breaking down their five favorite stories from the weekend in 10 minutes or less. Listen each week during the football season, Mondays and Wednesdays at Wondery, that's WONDERY.FM/THS/LFN. Great guys, great listen. Check it out today. The rankings came out, the second rankings for this year came out, as the rage is all about the talk about how things are going to affect the final rankings. And we don't know yet. We certainly see that there are some movements every week. We knew that, for example, Michigan State was going to move out. What is confusing to many is how Michigan State at this point is below Michigan when they beat them just a couple of weeks ago. It is frustrating. It, more than anything, goes to the disorganization, speaking of disorganization, of the committee, how they do it, a little bit of a figure-it-out-as-we-go approach. I think they lose a lot of credibility how they do it. I don't know that there's a perfect way. I think that they get caught between a rock and a hard place. You've got a system in which you've got to select. People ask me all the time, well, Chris, who are the two best teams? Who are the four best teams? Well, the answer to that is it's not for me to decide. It's for them to decide on the field. But you certainly, if you ask me who looks best on film and who I think is the best over certain criteria, yeah, I do it. I do it all the time. But then you also have to factor in most deserving versus who's the best. Who's the best in week one is different than week three, which is different than week six and nine and 12 and so on. Teams get better, teams get worse. How do you factor that in? If all games are going to be important, then you must respect the fact of an outcome that might go one way or the other. Because if it's just about who's hot at the end, well, then does the end of the season mean more? Does the beginning of the season mean less? Vice versa? Exactly what are we seeing here? Well, yes and no, and could be. It is very nebulous, and it's very moving in a way that's very unflattering and very unsavory and very unpalatable in some eyes. Look, I don't think you're going to ever get into a situation where you're going to please everyone. I am getting more and more into the group that says, look, A, you don't need more than four teams to determine a national champion. In fact, you don't even need four sometimes. But is that the most important thing? Or do we want to take the clouding of judgment and the movement of criteria and maybe create a little bit more of a organized way, speaking of organization as the theme of the day, of putting teams in, giving them, quote unquote, a chance. Now, I don't believe everybody should have a chance. I think you should earn a chance. I think you can look at certain things like winning your conference, getting an automatic bid, provided you meet certain criterias of, you know, I don't think you want to have a four-loss conference champion get in. I think you have to be ranked a certain way, and I think there are ways to do it. But I think putting teams in and having automatic bids and at-larges are something we need to do. I've been asked about, in general sense, not just as it relates to the playoffs, but college, NFL, about teams getting better. You know, people, I use this term all the time, and I don't mean it as some sort of a cute saying. You never stay the same. Every day, you either get better or you get worse. I don't care what you do, how you do it. You either get better or you either get worse. Somebody's getting better. Everybody's trying to do the same thing. So how are you getting better relative to the other guy or worse? There's circumstances that are going to change the construct of a team through the course of the season. Injuries, for example. How you develop a team, how well coached you are to develop and get better, or maybe you get a little bit better, but somebody else gets a lot better, and so they jump you. They're better than you by week 7 as opposed to you might have been better in week 3, whatever. But the getting better over the course of time is more of a thing now. And here's why. It is tough to get better or tougher to get better in the traditional offseason than we used to. You're not allowed to put on pads as much, high school, college, or NFL. So you don't have as many hard physical practices that can really test and develop your team. Now, there are things you can do to develop the passing game. I think speed and conditioning, all those things are important. And yes, you hear me say this in February, March, April, what's being done now in off-season conditioning programs are going to affect a lot of what you're going to do during the season. But it's a constant building blocks. It's a constant moving up a ladder rung by rung by rung by rung, step by step by step. If you look at a team, very often we say, week 2, this team did that. Well, they're not very good. I saw them in week 2, and if you haven't followed them, you haven't studied them all year long, they're not going to be the same. If you think about your off-season program and you think about the practices, well, you don't have as many practices under your belt to be as prepared in the early part of the season. I say this in the NFL all the time. Okay, you're going to take away a preseason game. Eventually, you may take away 2. You take away all those padded practices. How the hell are you going to be ready for week 1? Well, the answer is everything's relative, yes. But you're not going to be as good or as ready in week 1 in this day and age as you would 20, 25 years ago. Because you could do more to get ready for week 1. Now you don't. So what you see is a rate of growth. By November, let's say, as we are right now, we've not only played 8-9 weeks of football. Think of how many practices that, okay, the installs in the spring, in the summer camp, in the preseason games, in the practices week 1, week 2, week 3, week 4, week 5, week 6, etc., etc., etc. You start building one practice over another, over another, over another, over another. Stands to reason you're going to be, should be, a better football team in November than you were in September. You should be able to do more. You should know more. You should have learned more. You should become more comfortable. Isn't that how you are taught in school, in math? Don't they take you from one particular chapter, then you build off of that because you got to know that to go to the chapter 2, then to chapter 3 and chapter 4, and then you have the 9 weeks test or whatever. And then so by the end of the year, you've built off of one step versus another step. If you lose a step, you're kind of lost, right? And you got to make that up and it becomes problematic and you're not. Students may struggle. Students may get behind. Sometimes you see the whole class is struggling, and sometimes the teacher says, we're going to go back and go over this again because we, you know, chapter 6 is not working because four wasn't really learned as well. And so we need to go back and have refreshers on all this. Football's no different. If you build it and teach it and you grow one upon another, the rate of which it can grow is naturally you're going to get better as the year goes along. Now, people will say, oh, well, my team is not getting better because we've lost four in a row. No. It doesn't mean you're going to win more games at the end. Somebody's got to win. Somebody's got to lose. You might be a worse team the first 4 weeks of your college schedule, but you might be 4-0 because the teams you played are weaker teams. You might be a better, sometimes significantly better team by the last four games that you play, but you may play tougher opponents and may go 0-4 in those games. If you only can identify how good you are by your record, well, then you're not going to know whether somebody's better or not. You just know how good they are or how weak they are relative to the team that they're playing. So I think all of that's important on how you understand how you develop a team and how you get better. And when you put a good practice versus another practice and another, all of a sudden, by November, you can run a lot more of your packages, offensively, defensively, special teams. You can put a lot more stuff in because everybody understands it better then. It's like a class in math. They all get that. All right, great. Got chapter four. Now we can go to 5 and 6 and really build and get some steam. That's football. Well, we now can do more. Guess what? Man, they didn't. They blitzing a lot more. They should have been doing that in week two. No, they shouldn't have been blitzing more in week two because they didn't know what the hell they were doing. It's like a damn fire drill with second graders in week two. They weren't ready to do it. They didn't understand it. A blitz or a play or a formation or a scheme doesn't win by itself. It wins in relation on how well you're able to execute it. So if you can't execute it very well, it doesn't do a damn bit of difference to run it or run it a bunch. So you install some things, you get into an open date or a bye week. You can go back and do some things, add a few more things to the plate, unscouted looks. Use that time to get a little bit better. Put more blitz packages in. A lot of things that you can do. We saw that with LSU against Alabama last week. So those are the things that you do to get better. So how does it relate to studying who the best teams are is how do teams get better. You know, you can look and think, well, this team won every game, and they won every game by 25 points. They may have been consistent. But I bet you if you break down the tape, there's some times, and you know what you're looking for, you know that there's some games they were better in some things, and in some games they weren't as good. And then sometimes you take a step back, not because necessarily of that you're not developing, but somebody in a style matchup will cause you some problems that you're not as good at. They'll throw you that trick question in the quiz that you get in class. You got to go back. You got to relearn that. You got to study that. That's not something we went over as much because we haven't really seen that as much. And so it may set you back. So maybe you win a game that you didn't play as well. Your personnel got you through it, but you weren't as good because you weren't as prepared for it. Why? Because you needed to spend more of your 20-hour work week working on the things that were really going to help you win and lose. And then if you're thrown something that's a little bit different, you have an issue. It's also why, you know, in pro ball, we often say it's what you do in November on. It's about health. It's how you play at the back end of the season, how you're able to put in more stuff, and how well you're able to run all your stuff. I think that's a big, big part of it. So that's how you get better, and that's a big part of it. I think that in the playoff rankings, I always ask, what should be the criteria? Is it the most deserving team? Is it the best team? Is it a combination of both? Okay, it's a combination, but what's the best combination? You know, people can, you hear this all the time. I'm going to make a case for Team A. This is the taste for team. You know how you can make statistics or make a case like you were in a court of law for a team and for against a team. Well, that's not an honest or prudent evaluation. The evaluation is just, what do the facts say? What do the subjectivity say? Who looks better? Who is better? Well, you can look at, has the team gotten better? What were the circumstances when they did play? How much different are they are now? I think you need to factor in head-to-head if you play head-to-head. I think you certainly have to look at the record, but you have to look at strength of record and strength of schedule, who you've beaten, who you lost to, if you lost, and how much have you gotten better, and who is better. And I think you got to, you know, it's not an easy thing. Who are the best teams? I can tell you that I think that there's some teams that I just think are better right now that may not even have a chance, that because they've lost two games or three games at the end of the year, well, they don't deserve to get in because everybody has a chance, maybe not an equal chance because everybody's schedule is a little different, but you've got to be able to perform. You've got to be able to execute. And even though you get better, it is important that you reach a certain level of competency and success relative to an opponent each and every week, which is why I think recruiting and scheduling are the two most important things in college football. In the NFL, it's plenty of opportunities to get in. We all know how the playoffs work. And I have change in my mind. Again, I don't think we need more teams to determine a national champion. But I do think it would, you're not going to stop all the arguments. You're not going to stop all the frustrations. But what it would do, it would create more opportunity and would eliminate many of the arguments that we currently have that are justifiable. You know my feeling. I've always felt like we should have, take the regular season and we should have what I call built in on the back end of the schedule, like a couple of non-scheduled weeks where we take the best teams that have had the best years and we play like we have these early season games that could be interesting, but they might be duds. They might be great games depending upon the expectations because we make these games years in advance. Well, guess what? If we build in some games to the back end of the schedule through the regular schedule or in a bowl games, and then we take the best teams that have had the best years and put them in bowl games, we could pick four then, and we could solve a lot of these arguments. So you'd give Cincinnati can only play who they play. Are they one of the four best? I don't know that they are. I don't know that I know that they will not have had a difficult of a challenge. Then you can help that by putting them in a more difficult circumstances in the back end of their season. If their schedule is really weak, then put them in a game against a formidable opponent that's maybe another really good group of five team or a good P5 team that's maybe got a couple of losses, and then maybe they work their way into a bowl game, and then you can have a good sample size of who's really the best teams, and you could pick the four. We're not going to do that. We're going to go eventually to a 12-team playoff. And you know what? I'm on the lines now of saying, to heck with it. I think that it's having better games at the back end of the season is going to be a lot of fun. More football is a good thing for me. I love it. Might it take some luster off of the big, big games in the regular season? Perhaps. But it's going to make and heighten up the importance of other games, which will keep teams alive in their own division, in their own conference, that's going to eventually allow them to earn a berth into the playoffs. So I think it does open the door. So what's the criteria is something that we're going to get into. I want to get into some of the games of the weeks, and I want to get into the mailbag segment. But I want to ask you a question. Do you feel like the last one out when it comes to sports betting? Don't know where to start? Understand where the market is moving, which smart bets are out there, and have some fun listening while you're at it. BetQL Daily, sponsored by FanDuel, is a must-listen show for sports bettors and sports fans alike. They're a great listen. Fun, informative, very helpful. Hosts Joe Ostrowski, Joe Gigolo, and Aaron Hackensworth serve up wager entertainment, the sports talk you love with the betting insights you need. Each weekday, find out where the market is moving across all of the week's biggest sporting events. Miss out on earlier games? BetQL Daily has you covered there too, with recaps from some of the biggest recent moments in sports. If you're not sure where to start, start with sports betting. Start with BetQL Daily, presented by FanDuel. Listen weekdays 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Odyssey, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Games of the week this week, and I'll get to you in the mailbag segment. What is intriguing me on the calendar this week? First of all, in college, I want to see, and there are a bunch of them. You know, there are plenty. I'm going to get into what's in the Landry Lab in a second. Michigan, Penn State. How healthy will Sean Clifford be? I believe Penn State can win this game against Michigan. I don't think Michigan or Michigan State are playoff caliber. And I think Penn State can beat them. Oklahoma, Baylor. It's one of the hurdles that is going to put Oklahoma in the playoffs if they run it. Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and then a Big 12 championship game against one of those teams. Right now it looks like Oklahoma State twice. That would certainly put them in. Remember, Oklahoma does not have a good win yet on their schedule, and they haven't looked impressive doing it. But if they win, ugly or not, unimpressive or not, they run the table, they are in one of the four, lock, stock, and barrel. I can tell you that. Because all of those teams that they're playing are ranked, and they're going to play four of them. Well, they're going to play three, and they're going to play one of those three twice. Four games, all ranked. The early window, Oklahoma, Baylor, Michigan, Penn State, jump out at me most. Also, I'll be having on Mississippi State, Auburn, Northwestern, Wisconsin. I will have on West Virginia, Kansas State, which will probably tell us kind of where the separation is for the 15th in the 15 in the Big 12. Then the second window, 2:30 Eastern time, Georgia, Tennessee. I don't think Tennessee's going to threaten Georgia a lot, but they're going to give Georgia a look with their offense and a tempo that's going to give Georgia's defense a different look than they've had before. So I'm curious to see how Georgia handles it. I'm going to have detailed breakdown for you at LandryFootball.com, how I think it's going to come out, but I'm curious to see how they handle it, the up-tempo. Tennessee, I mean, outscored Kentucky with 13 minutes of time of possession last week. Now, it's not going to be the same, a different team, but they can score quick. They can do more with less. How many offensive snaps when they get, and can they do anything defensively to slow down Georgia's running game? I think not. Minnesota, Iowa is going to be really intriguing in that time slot. As the Big Ten West is coming down to cases, still like Wisconsin a little bit more, but we shall see. Purdue, I don't think they will be able to top off their win of Michigan State last week with a win against Ohio State this week. But that intrigues me. Miami, Florida State, where has that game gone? That is somewhat interest. I'll have that on. Iowa State, Texas Tech. USC Cal's postponed, you know by now. BC, Georgia Tech, South Carolina, Missouri, Stanford, Oregon State. In the third window, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, intriguing. In the SEC, like the way this A&M team is playing, like their chances against Ole Miss on the road in Oxford. Arkansas, LSU, Notre Dame, Virginia, TCU, Oklahoma State, NC State, Wake Forest in that third window. And then the late window, Washington State, Oregon, as Oregon's trying to finish off, as I mentioned, going to likely have to play Utah twice, the first one in Salt Lake City, to earn a playoff spot. They're going to have to run the table, no question about it. They've got the nice win. They've got a bad loss against Stanford. And, boy, Stanford looking worse and worse. That's the other thing. When you're talking about bad losses, they're a bad loss but it looks worse. And sometimes a team beats you and plays well and gets worse 4 and 5 weeks later, so it looks worse. Well, it's not the same team you lost to or that you beat. So you have to look at all that. I think all those things are interesting. But that's my look inside this week. On Sunday, certainly on Thursday night, Baltimore-Miami. New Orleans-Tennessee, intriguing in the first window. Atlanta-Dallas-Jacksonville-Indy. Cleveland at New England, very interesting. Buffalo-the Jets, can the Bills rebound after losing to the Jags last week? Detroit-Pittsburgh-Tampa at Washington in the second window on Sunday. Carolina at Arizona. The Vikings in Los Angeles against the Chargers. The Eagles going to Empower Field in Denver. Seattle, Green Bay. And then on Sunday night in Vegas, the Chiefs and the Raiders. Monday night, the Rams and the Niners in what is clearly a must-win. The Bears, the Bengals, the Giants, the Texans all on bye weeks this week. Hey, how about we talk to you great listeners, Kev Belargo, Rich Coates, Greg, all joining us in the chat room. Really appreciate you here. Rich says, can you explain the two-a-days and how it works as well as the purpose behind it? Well, two-a-day practices, Rich, as I mentioned, are a thing of old. The two-a-day practices, when we had those, was simply that. You had two practices in a day. You'd have a practice in the morning, you'd have rest time, meeting time, and you go have an afternoon practice. That took place in training camp. It was done to get a team ready for the season, to get their physical endurance built up, and to get maximum amount of practices. You don't have that anymore. You basically have one-a-day practices. So, but that's the genesis of it. Rich Coates, would Odell Beckham be a good fit for the Patriots, considering it would improve their receiving core as well as the passing game? Yeah, I think it would. I don't think that while the Patriots are considered a prime opportunity or still a good team, I don't think they're the same type of team for a receiver that's looking for the best option. I think he'd want somewhat more of an experienced quarterback, like a Patrick Mahomes, like I mentioned with Kansas City. Now, look, it doesn't mean the Chiefs are going to make him the best offer. If he gets a better offer somewhere else, he may go with that. We're going to have to see what offers he gets. He can only go where somebody makes him an offer. We'll see how that plays out. Rich also has, what was my scouting evaluation of Freddie Joe Nunn? Freddie Joe Nunn went to Ole Miss and Mark Bavaro out of Notre Dame. Freddie was a really good edge rusher, played from a two-point stance, very effective, not as comfortable in his pass drops, but he had good edge rush speed. Mark Bavaro was a beast. He was great. He was big. He was physical. He was in one of the line of great tight ends. It come out of Notre Dame. Just a big physical guy that was a great blocker. He was like a tackle in the run game, and he had great hands to catch the football. Was a great, great. He and Zeke Mowat was a good two tight end set for the Giants back in the Parcells days. Does Baylor need OU to turn the ball over multiple times to win? It would help, Kev. I don't know that they need it. I think that this Baylor offense, you know, I think you can move the football in Oklahoma. I think the real key, the real challenge is going to be defensively. I think defending the quarterback in the run game is going to be a challenge for Baylor. But Oklahoma's not dominated against anyone. So it's kind of hard to look and say, well, Baylor's going to have to, you know, get this break and that break. Look, there are a lot of teams not as good as Baylor that has played pretty close to the mark of Oklahoma. So my initial thought is, yes, it would certainly help for Baylor to have some turnovers. That's always a big help. But I don't know that it's a necessity. We'll see. Greg, I have been so busy, Greg, haven't gotten back with you. Greg says, a great show as always. My question today, the Cowboys are having a good season outside of a dud last week against the Broncos. What concerns me is Mike McCarthy and his game management week to week. It seems like he does something strange every week, going on fourth down twice last week. Is that something that is going to cost the Cowboys in the postseason? I don't know. I think that he's got his team playing well. I do agree this Cowboy team is very good. I think they're one of many teams in the NFC that are capable of winning it all. I think that You know, I think Mike gets, like a lot of coaches get criticized. Look, going for it is a gut feeling, but it's also based on certain analytics, certain feel for how things are going, and it's certainly the situation in the game. How do you feel your team is playing? So there's a lot that goes into it, and you know, a lot of those decisions, when you go for it and it works, it's a good decision. When you go for it and it doesn't work, it's a bad decision. And so I kind of stick up for coaches there. Look, I think Mike has also had his moments. We've seen where game management hasn't been the best. It's certainly something that, from his standpoint and their standpoint, that it doesn't happen. But look, we've seen it. We've seen it happen with a number of coaches. So I don't know that it's going to cost them. As you mentioned, it may or may not. Hey, folks, I really appreciate you, Greg. Appreciate the questions and the thoughts, Kev Belargo, Rich Coach. Appreciate all of your involvement in the show. Want to remind you of a couple of things. Check out our great friends over at BetQL Daily, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. You can watch on Odyssey, Spotify, or your favorite podcast at BetQL Daily. And our good friends, Tom and Hawk. Joe Thomas, you know Joe Thomas, and you know Andrew Hawkins. You can check them out on Mondays and Wednesdays. Check them out as well. Great listens, great guys, good shows that will add to your enjoyment this football season. And tell them that we sent you there. That would really mean a lot to us and help us a great deal. Check out LandryFootball.com for all the breakdowns, all the latest news and notes, all the preview breakdowns, all the reviews inside the film room. We got it all for you over at LandryFootball.com. Check out this podcast, download it, sign up for the Landry Football's conference call. That helps us a great deal. You know somebody that wants to become part of the show, wants to improve their business, we can partner up with them. We can definitely help them with that. So send them along to us. You can reach me at LandryFootball.com. Contact Chris. We appreciate you joining us. Always a lot of fun to have you involved in the show. So we'll do it again next week. Same time, same channel. Have a great one, everybody. Enjoy the football games, and we'll talk to you next time.